think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
But they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 218 of Low Limit Football on this Monday, September 24th, 2018, on the Beyond the Pitch Media Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we have a new player of the year from FIFA. Who was it that broke the Messi-Ronaldo chain? We will let you know. Lionel Messi, speaking of him, breaks the record for most appearances in La Liga by a non-Spanish player. Just another record Messi holds now in La Liga. Chelsea falls from perfection with a 0-0 draw at West Ham. Is it still a three-team race in England with them, Liverpool, and Manchester City? We're going to discuss that. And tonight, Zlatan Ibrahimovic hints at a departure from the LA Galaxy at the end of the MLS season. Is he back on his way to Malmo? We're going to talk about that and much more with our very special guest, SVT's Joanna Frondin, who will be joining us in a little bit. But joining me right now, my big-time co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas. Man, how was your week?
I'm doing well, Joe. I mean, my week was great. I mean, I'm going to actually go back to that question about the goals that Messi scored in his hat trick. Mm-hmm. Take a guess of how many. This is obviously not a trivia question, but take a guess of how many career hat tricks he scored in his career.
Ooh.
I just listened to it the other day.
I'm going to just throw a number out there, and I think I'm lowballing it, but I'm going to say 26.
Nope.
It's much higher, isn't it?
Much higher.
Yeah, it's
48.
I was gonna say, I'll bet you it's in the 40s. 48. Wow. Do you have the numbers on Cristiano Ronaldo? I mean, because that's always the comparison, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I could look it up real quick.
I'm just curious as to how that falls in. So, you know, looking back in the Champions League, Rob, last week, just real quick. You know, I know we have a topic to talk about in opening thoughts for Champions League, but was there anything that struck you from Champions League play last week? Any result, any particular play, a goal, a save, anything?
Oh, no, I don't think there was anything. I think more than anything, it was more what we saw on the pitch rather than the actual results and goals scored. I think when you look at back at all the matches that were played, I mean, I think the two shocks that we could talk about is, well, I wouldn't say shock, but at least something that is kind of different was the PSG loss to Liverpool and the Lyon win to Manchester City. Yeah. I feel those are the ones that stood out for me.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the Liverpool match did not disappoint. I think, you know, obviously 3-2, you're getting plenty of goal scoring in that match. But I think many are surprised with Lyon going into Manchester and getting a result there. It's a huge, huge result for them. And not that we think City will not advance, but boy, it puts them on notice, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, 100%.
It's amazing. So let's did you have the Ronaldo number there?
Yeah, I'm trying to find it here for some reason, and I can't find it.
Let me
double check. But you can give me the trivia question. Don't
yeah,
worry
let's
about
do
that.
It. All right. So for the trivia question, obviously this weekend, or not obviously, but Sergio Aguero made his 300th appearance in the EPL on the weekend. And in that 300th appearance, he scored a goal to break himself into the top 10 goal scorers all time in the Premier League. Okay. And I got to thinking to myself, you know, he's scored all those goals with Manchester City in the Premier League. He hasn't done it for, like, you know, City, United, and Arsenal. He's only been with one team. So, not that I'm going to ask you the names of each individual, because I think we'd be here all night. But in the five leagues, including the Premier League, so Premier League, Bundesliga, Serie A, La Liga, and Ligue 1, can you tell me how many players from each league are in the top 10 all-time in goal scoring and have scored all their goals with one team?
Oof.
So, I'm not asking you for names. I'm asking you just for how many players in each league. Okay, I have the names, and I'll give them to you. And I'll even give them to you based on my research where they ranked.
All right, can you just ask the question one more time so I get a better understanding?
So Sergio Aguero scored scored a goal on the weekend in his 300th appearance in the EPL.
Yep.
And he broke into the top 10 of all-time goal scorers in the EPL, career goals. Right?
Yes.
But he scored all those goals with one team, Manchester City.
Yep.
So from the five leagues, can we go through each individual league, and can you give me the amount of players in each league that are in the top 10 in all-time goal scoring but scored all of their goals with one team?
So you want me to give you a number?
I want you to give me a number for each league. And then, you know,
Is there a total number?
Well, let me add it up. I gave part of the answers away.
So that I can be specific.
There's 13 players overall across the five leagues that are in the top 10 of their respective leagues all-time in goal scoring.
Yep.
But all the goals that those individuals have scored, they've scored with only one team.
Okay, I got it.
All right. So, and then we'll give you the trivia answer in about 45 minutes or so. So let's get to the opening thoughts tonight, Rob. And opening thoughts, like we said, is a Champions League question. It's a Champions League opening thought, and it is the red card that Cristiano Ronaldo received let's call it touching Jason Murillo's head. It happened in about the 23rd, 24th minute of the tie between Juventus and Valencia, a match that Juve won 2-0 with two penalty kicks. But on the play, it looks like Murillo and Cristiano Ronaldo collide going into the penalty box, which for me, Rob, I think was going to be part of my discussion with this.
Definitely.
Now, Ronaldo kind of stands over him as if to say, hey, you dove, and either grabs the top of his head or rakes his fingers across the top of his head or pats the top. Describe it how you want, but touches the top of his head. The referee did not, who was the German referee, and I can't remember his name now, Felix Birch, did not see this. His back was turned to this. He went to the goal line official. They had a discussion, and then he turned around and handed Cristiano Ronaldo a straight red, throwing him out, putting Juve down to 10 men on the road within 30 minutes of the match kicking off. And like I said, Juve went on to win the match. For me, it looked like Valencia had no plan. I think the original plan was stifle Cristiano Ronaldo, play defense and counter. That really was what the plan looked like for the first 20 minutes or so. Even be physical with Cristiano Ronaldo. And once the Cristiano Ronaldo part of that program wasn't there anymore, it almost looked like Valencia was lost. And I think, as weird as it sounds, I think Valencia might have played better if Ronaldo was still on the pitch. But Juve looked like a better side. There were many times where they didn't look like a 10-man Juventus. They looked like they were at least even, if not dominant, compared to them. And the two penalty calls for the two penalty kicks were completely warranted. They were complete fouls. But, you know, there are a few arguments here. One, was the Valencia side goading Cristiano Ronaldo into something? I think so. I think there were a couple of plays even before where Cristiano Ronaldo was just drilled to the floor. One of them was like a basketball pick, Rob, and I don't remember the player, but he stepped into Ronaldo's path, no ball, never made a play for a ball or anything, and just looked like a basketball player making a pick and just knocks Ronaldo to the floor. In front of the referee, no call. You know, there's obviously the call for VAR now. We're in the Champions League, we don't have VAR. Pretty much Champions League and EPL. After that, everybody else has VAR. Why are we not getting with the times with Champions League and even with the EPL, which is another discussion? And I think that the straight red was harsh. Now, we ran a poll on our Twitter page, and I believe, and I have to go back and find the results, but it was like 36% said that at best Ronaldo should have received a yellow card, and 34% said it wasn't even a foul. Also, you go back to Murillo, what he did, and what really instigated Ronaldo was the fact that Murillo dove on the play, and really embellishing what he was trying to get as a call on Cristiano Ronaldo, and I think that's what pissed Ronaldo off where it got to that point. So it was a lot. There was a lot of moving parts, and I think the red card was extremely harsh. I think the rest of Twitter world that we saw any of the pundits commenting on it, whether it be television, social media, I think we found maybe one person that thought it should have been a red card. After that, Rob, it was an awful call, and I mean, you know, I believe since then they have not exacted the 3-match ban on him, just the 1 match for the red card. So he'll miss the Juve game against Young Boys at the Allianz in Turin, I believe next week. But he will be around for both Manchester United ties, which is probably really bad news for Manchester United. So what are your thoughts on the whole happening? The penalty, the foul, the suspensions. I mean, what's your take on it, Rob?
No, I mean, it's certainly something that, look, I'll agree with everything you said. I mean, I think, first of all, it was just unjustifiably, you know, nonsense to see him get sent off. Yes, there is a rule where it's in the laws of the game that, you know, touching someone or using force aggressively to, you know, hurt an opponent is deemed, you know, a red card. But in this sense, you know, Ronaldo, at least from the replays that we saw, and, you know, we saw it from different angles, Joe. It wasn't just the one straight angle that we normally get. You know, you saw it from another wide angle, from the left side, one from the right side, one from the top, all those different angles. And you could see it was just a simple tap. And I think for that to be, you know, something ridiculous of him getting sent off for that is, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, for me, I think at best it should have been a yellow card, but a red card, 100% no. Not even close. And that's the one thing that I, you know, I'm pissed off about, you know, because you see worse fouls as well. And, you know, those fouls don't get noticed. Some do get noticed, but, you know, they only get like a yellow card at best. So, yeah, I mean, it's all different. I mean, you know, every referee in this sense is different. You know, they're not. And that's kind of different to what we see with VAR as well. You know, the fact that an interpretation of how a play is looked is going to be different from every single referee. It's not perfect, but, you know, as much as you want to follow the rules of what a foul is, what a booking is, what a sending off is, you're going to have people that are going to be completely different than what you're supposed to be doing. And that's something that I feel is, you know, it's ridiculous. Like, I don't see why someone would do such a thing. And send off Ronaldo. I think he should have appealed, at least to the sense that he would have just gotten no games sent off. I'm sorry, no games suspended. You know, and he does play the game against Young Boys. But at least from a Juventus standpoint, what matters, of course, is that they won. The fact of the matter that they won, and the fact of the matter is that it is still early in the group stage for the Champions League. It is a tough group. We know that. You know, it has Valencia and Manchester United, and it is tough. But it's very early in the group to realize that this would be something bad for Juventus. Yes, it's tough to go to one game without, you know, you're basically your best player. But I think they should be able to solve this problem. And look at the depth that they have as well. They should have this problem solved for the next few games. And I think the real winner of this game, I think for me, I think is Paulo Dybala. Yeah. Because now, you know, he's been having such a lackluster start of the season so far. I think now he could definitely take advantage of, you know, to the extent of a teammate's suspension, try to bring back his momentum.
Well, he's going to need to, you know, and not to totally, you know, move this into a Juventus discussion, but if you watch them on the weekend, they look like a team that was constantly trying to force the ball to Ronaldo, and I think you're starting to see that a little bit with this team in general. Yeah, they're winning. You know, I know they conceded goals before.
That's something that it's funny you mentioned that, Joe, because I was thinking the exact same thing. I mean, what, they scored 2 goals in the last 10 minutes, yeah, against Frosinone?
Exactly. Yeah, Frosinone, who had just taken a 5-0 thumping to Sampdoria just a week prior. And here they are, you know, just fighting Juventus off tooth and nail, where Juve couldn't really break them down until they introduced Bernardeschi into the match, and right. He really was the spark for them. Now, you know, with Juve, they would have introduced either Bernardeschi or they would have introduced Douglas Costa, but obviously with the suspension, you know, that he suffered for the spitting incident, you know, you obviously can't introduce him. But, you bring up a great point about the Dybala part, because to see Dybala go into this match now against Young Boys without the concept of force-feeding Cristiano Ronaldo, I think is, like you said, is going to help him. And you're going to get Dybala's true colors here at this point. Either he is that player we think he can be, or he's not, and he's just really more of a serviceable player. I think it's the former, not the latter. But he's got to prove that now. And unfortunately, we're going to put him under a microscope for one game against a team that is you know, a champion in Europe. Okay, so remember, I know everyone, all the group stages are weak, you know, all they've got some of these lousy teams. These teams still won their respective leagues. So
not in Juventus' group, that is.
Well, no, well, United didn't win their group, but Young Boys did. Mm-hmm. I mean, not their group, but they won their league.
Swiss league, yes.
Right, you know, Valencia did not. I get that, but in Young Boys, you've got a team that did win their league. And you look at United finished second, right, in the Premier League,
uh-huh.
One of the top leagues in the world. Valencia finished fourth in La Liga, one of the top leagues in the world. So the teams at this level, the group stages, for the most part, are not slouches. Okay, so Dybala's going to have to prove himself against a decent side, and he's only going to get 90 minutes to do it, Rob. So we'll have to see if that plays, because I got to tell you, he was not that great this weekend against Frosinone. He didn't provide any answers to the questions that Frosinone was posing.
Right.
But for that matter, neither did Ronaldo, really, right? I mean, you know, nobody got the only person that was able to advance the cause was Bernardeschi when he came in. Otherwise, this team, it was almost enough the whole match. And credit to Frosinone for playing such a tight defensive game. But in the end, you know, you're Juventus. You are a team of world beaters that is one of the favorites to win not only the Serie A, but the Champions League. You are unbeaten, and you have arguably the best player in the world on your team, wearing your jersey. You need to beat Frosinone 5-6-0. Easy. If Sampdoria did it the week before, you are better than Sampdoria at every position on the pitch. You've got to win that match big, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, credit to Frosinone to get that type of match and to hold them off as long as they did. So that's just the credit of, you know, maybe overconfidence by Juventus, but also I think, you know, Frosinone came to play and realized of how important this game was to take on the defending Italian champions and realize, you know, hey, we're not going to be pushover. We're not going to, you know, get smashed by you guys. You know, we're going to try and do something and get a result. Yeah. Unfortunately, they didn't, but, you know, they were able to hold on so well that, you know, it scared Juventus a bit.
Absolutely. Just to give you the results of the poll that we took, 35% said no foul, 35% said yellow card, 15% foul only, and 15% red card from our poll that we took last week on that.
I'm going to go back, and you were mentioning the hat trick. Messi has 48 in his career. Ronaldo, 51.
Oh, wow. So there you go. But Ronaldo's, not all of Ronaldo's were in the in La Liga.
Nope. It was in, obviously, Real Madrid. But this is career-wise. This is all his career. So at Portugal, at Real Madrid, at Manchester United, Messi is only for Barcelona and Argentina.
Exactly. So, all right. So we obviously, Rob, you and I had the pleasure of introducing or interviewing Joanna Franden from SVT just yesterday. We got to talk Champions League. We got to talk Zlatan Ibrahimovic. There were so many other great things we had, but we had a great conversation with her. So without further ado, I'd like to present to the listeners, as soon as I can get it up and running here, the Joanna Franden. Joining us now on Low Limit Football, TV pundit for SVT, Miss Joanna Franden. Joanna, how are you tonight?
I'm very well. How are yourself?
Very, very good. Thank you. I want to open the questioning real quick with looking back on PSG and the week that was. PSG overcomes a Adrian Rabiot own goal in the 11th minute against Rennes to win 3-1 on the weekend. But prior to that, losing 3-2 on their journey to Anfield and match against Liverpool in the Champions League. I want to look back on Thomas Tuchel because in the end, we're seeing a perfect PSG side domestically, but not necessarily a lot in the same in terms of their Champions League, but a little bit of a struggle to begin with, having to overcome a deficit but then losing very, very late on the Firmino goal. So I'd like your assessment of what Tuchel has done so far in this very early point in the season so far.
Well, I mean, I think the whole problem is the bit in your question. He hasn't really done anything. I mean, there is nothing so far in this PSG that gives you a clue about what Tuchel wants, you know, who he is and, you know, what his mark would be on the team. It's very obvious that PSG would be quite superior, you know, in their home league. Nobody's surprised by that. It's good for Tuchel, you know, it started well, to be honest. And to be fair to him, it's not always been the case with the other coaches of PSG, but everybody in Paris was only waiting for the European games to start to see what was the worth of this team. And it turned out against Liverpool to be, if not nothing, at least very, lots of doubts, let's say, surrounding this team. What has Tuchel done? Not much, you know. And I mean, he probably has tried. He also did say a few days before the Liverpool game that he had wished for more from the Mercato, you know, the silly season. And obviously he said he wasn't 100% happy with it, which are quite strong words coming from a new manager. So it's, I mean, he's, you know, to be fair to him, maybe he didn't have the best team to work with. Obviously he has the best names in football with Neymar, with Mbappe. But what's he going to do with his midfield, where he gets to play Marquinhos, who is not a midfielder, in a crucial game as the one against Liverpool? And that's just one example. So it's not as easy as it might look for him, because the recruitments that they've made PSG lately aren't. They're very big names, but they're not very well balanced, I would say, you know, and especially on midfield. So, to sum it up, it was a big disappointment, the game against Liverpool. People in Paris are fed up. They have no more patience with not winning or at least going very far in the Champions League, because they've been building and building and waiting and waiting. This is the year it has to happen. And to be honest, it should have happened 3 years ago already, you know.
And I think, Joanna, looking at the team as a whole, obviously, you know, you're coming off obviously a World Cup winning side that France has produced with players like Mbappe, you know, players like Kimbembe as well, Areola. And then you look at the star players like Neymar, Cavani, Di Maria, Buffon obviously coming in as the goalkeeper. I mean, certainly this is definitely the season to really just demonstrate themselves that, yes, they could definitely compete at a domestic level. And I think right at the moment that is going to be a foregone conclusion, although it's so early to say. You know, you look at PSG's team as a whole and you compare it to the rest of the league, you know, they're just miles ahead of everyone else, even in the other domestic leagues as well, in the Coupe de la France and the Coupe de la Ligue. Is this a case where, for Tuchel, and I think obviously given the fact that PSG has just had that cutthroat culture of, you know, expecting the result and then that result being the main objective of the Champions League, you know, is this a case where, you know, for Tuchel at least, you know, if it's a champ, is it Champions League or bust for him? And do you see the end if for a manager like him, if they do not get the desired result, that is obviously win the Champions League?
Well, I don't really think that he would have to win the Champions League. What happened with Unai Emery is he got his two work. I mean, he got 2 years. You know, he wasn't kicked out after the first season where they didn't win the league, and B, were eliminated at the worst point of the Champions League, which is last 16, with that famous loss against Barcelona. They had the 4-0 in the first leg and then lost 6-1 at Camp Nou. He got to stay one more year. The year after, which was last season, they made it to the same stage, were kicked out by Real Madrid. In the fashion that they were eliminated from the competition, were troublesome, and eventually Emery had to go. So with those two seasons behind, maybe, you know, a semi-final would, you know, give Tuchel some sort of respect. I don't think that winning is necessary. They have to be a bit more humble about it, seeing how difficult it has been in the last 6-7 years, you know, with the likes of Zlatan, Cavani, Neymar, as you mentioned, Mbappe, Thiago Silva, and so on, Buffon now. But they definitely have to make it beyond last 16 and quarterfinal. I mean, there is no other alternative because, as I said, there is no more patience with this team from the supporters, from the rest. They're on the verge of becoming the ridiculous team of Europe. And that's a very, very big risk they're taking, you know, if they don't make it in the Champions League. So, and by signing a new coach as well. So he's going to have to take them, I would say, probably to at least semi-final. If that happens, it's going to feel like one or two steps forward and like it would be pointing in the right direction. But I mean, obviously taking them to the Champions League final would be the ultimate performance for Tuchel, because everybody knows they're going to win the domestic league. There's no other option, really.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree 100%. But now switching on to the Champions League, obviously the big news coming from the Champions League, not exactly the Liverpool result against PSG, but it was the sending off for Cristiano Ronaldo, who basically, you know, tapped the head of Jason Murillo against Valencia that got him sent off early in the game. Even though Juventus did get a win, there has been a lot of debate recently, even to, you know, people saying that it should have not been a red card. Even a yellow or even nothing in general. But I just want your thoughts on that. And, you know, was it justified that he did deserve that sending off?
I think this is tricky because having an opinion on this is so much feeling like you express your opinion on Cristiano Ronaldo. I would say that if it would be anybody else, I would look at the situation. I would go, no, that's not a red card. You know, why is that a red card? Then again, it's Ronaldo, and you know, it's for some reason it feels almost slightly political to you know, be against him or in favor of him. Trying to be neutral about it, I didn't see a red card. I mean, I wasn't obviously as close to the situation as the two players and perhaps the referee, but unless it's been proved that he really, really grabbed his head and I don't know, hurt him, you know, basically with his, I don't know, nails or whatever. I don't think that's a red card. I wouldn't have called for a red card if he got a yellow one anyway. I think that probably would have been, you know, the fairest decision to get him a yellow card and let him carry on. So yeah, it's a very particular situation, I think. You don't see many situations like that, and especially when they involve Cristiano Ronaldo, it becomes extremely political or very touchy, the whole subject. To me, it's like, it's not a good thing that what he's doing. Is it a red card direct? No, I don't think so.
No, absolutely. I agree 100%. And just switching gears real quick to my last question before I give it to Joe. Obviously, there have been big rumors, at least here in the United States, regarding, you know, Zlatan Ibrahimovic and his possible future. You know, he spoke to the media a couple of days ago, coming off of scoring his 500th career goal. There have been some rumors now recently of him probably not staying at LA Galaxy for quite some time. So I just want your thoughts on as well, you know, if you have heard any news of him possibly returning to Sweden or to another big club in the world. I mean, you know, from that, and of course, you know, what kind of impact do you think that a player like Zlatan Ibrahimovic has, you know, coming off of 500 career goals, only two active players now, and that's Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi, have that. Where does he stand in, and not just, I would say, Swedish, you know, sporting culture history, but, you know, Swedish history as a whole?
I really, really think that Zlatan is the most important Swede of the last 20 years in any, you know, aspect. I mean, politics, culture, society, sports. He is by far the most important person in Sweden, not only because he's the most well-known Swede abroad. You know, that's one thing, you know, that makes Swedes proud and all of that. But we have had other, you know, known, fairly known people or, you know, pop groups or whatever, although you might be a bit young to remember ABBA. But we have had well-known Swedish names before, Björn Borg in tennis and so on. Zlatan is something different because he's such a big character and such a controversial, I would say, person in Sweden. I mean, he has been in the headline, he's been making headlines for 15, almost 20 years, once a week at least, you know, and everybody has an idea about who Zlatan is, what they feel about him, what they think about him. Everybody has an opinion about him, basically, and he's very much a symbol, obviously, for, you know, the Swedish immigrant boy, you know, making his dreams come true and proving everybody wrong and all of that. So it's also, he's a big, he's a really, really, really big story in Sweden. Speaking of ethnicity, of class, of racism, subjects that are, reach far beyond the football and the football supporters. So in that sense, he is by far the most important Swede in the world, but also in Sweden, I would say. Second question, is it coming back home to Sweden to play? You know what? I looked at the quotes a little bit and I was thinking it feels very much like a year ago when he started talking about, or maybe just, is it only 6 months ago that he started talking about maybe playing the World Cup for Sweden, you know? The same kind of nuances. Oh, you know, maybe that this is not the best time to talk about it, but I don't close any doors, you know? You know, I kind of miss it a little bit. That's what he said about, you know, eventually going back to the Swedish team and playing the World Cup. It caused a complete stir in Sweden. That's what everybody was talking about for about, was it a month or so, until the Swedish Football Federation said, Zlatan, you have to make a decision, or we have to make it clear where you're standing, because this is this is not good for the team. You know, there's so much speculation. Every single training, every single press conference, all the questions are about you. And then Zlatan eventually said, no, I'm not coming back. I always said I wasn't going to come back to the national team. Now, he wanted a bit of buzz, I think, because so he's moved away from Europe to the States. He's not forgotten, but it's not, you know, the zenit or the center of the football universe in on a global scale, although he's a huge hit, obviously, overseas. So I thought that maybe he missed the headlines a little bit, and maybe he wanted a bit of a buzz. And maybe that's what he wants now as well. You know, saying that, you know, Swedish league, who knows? Maybe this is not the right time to talk about it, but, you know, I wouldn't close that door. He knows what he's doing. He's creating headlines. He's, you know, creating a stir in Sweden. People of his supporters of his Swedish home club, Malmö, are craving for him to come back. But he's always, up until now, he's always said, no, I'm not going to end my career in the Swedish league. Why? Because I want to, when I finish, it's going to be, you know, on top level. And I don't think I will be motivated to play at, a lower level. I mean, you know, the quality of the Swedish league isn't very high. So I'm going to stick with that. I think he's doing this to see how the message, you know, is interpreted. He's enjoying a bit of a buzz again. Maybe it's, you know, it did well accompany his 500th professional goal as well. And he you know, he wants to see whether people still long for him in Sweden, which everybody does, you know. That's what I'm feeling right now. I don't think it's going to happen.
Now, I just want to jump in here quickly on the Zlatan thing, because one thing that I look at with Zlatan, he's always been an attention grabber. You know, no matter where he's played, he's always wanted the spotlight on him. Even when he comes to Los Angeles, kind of did the exact same thing when he showed up. But Los Angeles, the LA Galaxy right now are struggling to get into the playoff spots. And it looks like they may not qualify for the playoffs here in MLS. Could this also be part of his motivation to deflect the attention from the turmoil that's happened at LA with the loss of Siggy Schmidt as their head coach, and really kind of put the focus back on him instead of putting it on the team?
I don't think so, because to me that wouldn't be the right strategy, because saying that I might end my career in Sweden is going to make big headlines where? In Sweden, but, you know, in Italy, in Spain, in England, and, you know, even in the States, it's not that big a deal, you know, where he goes after LA Galaxy. The firing of Siggy Schmidt got maybe what, two articles in Swedish press, because the people, Swedes don't care, don't know much about this team, and most of the Swedish football fans probably didn't even know the name of LA Galaxy coach. You know, they know about this club because Beckham was there and now Zlatan is there, and, you know, end of story. And obviously it's well known to Swedes that they're struggling to reach the playoffs, like you said. I'm sure he could have come up maybe with something else if he wanted to distract the attention from the sporting results. That, also knowing that Zlatan never hides behind or never makes excuses for bad results. He's you can say whatever you want about his ego, his, you know, the love of being in the middle of the, you know, being in the headlines, getting the attention, but he's never not assumed or not taken responsibility for a sport bad sporting results. So I don't feel that's really in line with his personality. He's very, he's usually quite honest about when things aren't going well sport-wise, and I don't think that it's a strategy to stop people from noticing that LA Galaxy aren't doing that well. I think more than anything it was for the Swedish, you know, throwing up a bone of for the Swedish supporters and the Swedish media and see whether they would, you know, react, or whether we would react as we always do by making headlines, by start speculating, by calling, you know, all his old teammates, calling the people of the club of Malmö. Did you get message? What's your reaction to this? This is how he manipulates media a little bit. I think he's probably enjoying it as well quite much.
Right. I do want to, before we let you go, I have one more question going back to the Champions League. And I wanted to look at Lyon, obviously with a huge, huge win over Manchester City in their first leg of the tournament, winning in Manchester, goals by Cornet and Nabil Fekir. You look at this Lyon side in a difficult group F with Hoffenheim, Shakhtar Donetsk, and obviously Manchester City. Did you, before this match, did you expect Lyon to advance from this group? And after this match, do you see a pathway for them out into the knockout stages?
I did believe they would go through, or they would have a good chance. But like everybody else, I thought that the only place that was up for grabs was the second place, obviously, in the group. I think that's still the case. I think that Manchester City got the wake-up bell, you know, this is not going to happen anymore. They did come back. They reacted well in this weekend's Premier League. So, I mean, that was probably more a little bit because of their lack of concentration or, you know, maybe lack of motivation even, or underestimating anyway your opponent. Now I think that Lyon are in a very good spot to make it to the playoff, well, to the elimination round. I still don't believe that they're gonna, like, I mean, they're still gonna struggle, you know, and this team is good. It's a good team, you know, no doubt about it. It's actually a very interesting club in the way that if you look at their producing of talent, how many talents they have actually sent away, you know, sent around to different clubs in Europe, really good clubs. You know, Lyon is a very, has everything that PSG doesn't have, to be honest. They have, they're well rooted in their area. They have a local sort of taste to them, which makes supporters love them. And they have, you know, a good following, good fans. They don't need fans from all over the world like PSG. They're quite different to PSG in that sense. But at this point, they're not going to be a team that, you know, it's challenging about the Champions League. They were really lucky and, you know, fair play, because they did a really great game against Manchester City. I think they have a great chance to go through. It's still, they will still only get through as second in the group, because Manchester City aren't going to let this slip away from them again. I don't think so.
I agree 100%. Ioana, thank you again for coming on the show and joining us tonight to break down Champions League, a little French football, and even all the way over to MLS and Zlatan Ibrahimovic. You know, we appreciate,
thanks for having me.
Yeah, we had a great time, and look forward to speaking with you again very soon.
Let's hope so.
All right. And that was Ioana Frandin from SVT joining us on the show. Great insight into the whole Zlatan Ibrahimovic thing, and it's something that we're going to jump into here now, Rob, you and I. Obviously, with Zlatan speaking to the, I believe it was the LA Times, it was a post-match interview that said he wasn't sure what he was going to do. Zlatan's under contract, not only this year but next year as well, but the ESPN article that I referenced cited that this might be a wage issue for him, Rob, where he's, you know, he wants to make more money. He's currently making $1.5 million a season. He's only the fourth highest paid player on the Galaxy. So he's really making, you know, less money, but 17 goals in 22 games, he's really been a huge piece of their puzzle. And you look forward to the LA Galaxy, they're currently sitting 3 points behind the Seattle Sounders. So a huge win yesterday, 3-0 victory in LA for them, you know, inching them closer to that last playoff spot. And now you look ahead at their schedule. They've got the Vancouver Whitecaps is another team they're fighting for a playoff spot. Sporting KC, Minnesota, and the Houston Dynamo. Four matches left in what could be Zlatan's MLS career, unless either they get into the playoffs or he moves on. I mean, do you think Zlatan will walk away at this point and just go play a year at Malmo and be done with it? Or do you think he likes the bright lights of LA and maybe this was just a ploy to kind of renegotiate his deal?
I mean, I think he's enjoying the time in Los Angeles, and I think, you know, for a player like him, you know, it wouldn't be a surprise, you know, where his next stop would be. Joanna said that. I think he said, obviously, you know, he doesn't want to go to Sweden and finish his career. You know, he thinks that, you know, at 36 and, you know, and a good 36, that he can do much more at other teams. You know, who's to say that he can't go to the new Miami team? You know, it's hard to say, really, because, you know, Zlatan is such an unpredictable player that we don't know what could happen to him. And I'm being completely honest, we don't know what will happen to him, what his future might hold.
And I think that, you know, that's kind of the key to Zlatan. You know, I kind of hinted to the fact that he's an attention grabber. He wants the spotlight on him. And to even give you a comment, I mean, just looking back at the comments, kind of benign. You know, he comes in here, and I just want to read this directly. I have 5 games. I'm happy. Physically, I feel strong. I feel good. I'm producing, so I just need to win games, and then everything is perfect. So it was kind of... It's kind of, you know, benign. He goes, going back previously, he said, I don't, and when he was asked about this, he said, I don't know. I have to discuss. This is not the moment to talk about that. It's something I'll discuss with the club, what they want, what I want. So let's see. So I think, you know, when you really read through the article and try to read the Zlatan tea leaves, which are very, very difficult to read, I think there is some hint that maybe he comes back and says, hey, you know, you're paying me 1.5. I think maybe with all the goals I scored and I got you into the MLS playoffs, this team is a dud. You had to fire your head coach. Maybe I need 2.5. Maybe I need a little bit more money. Maybe I need, you know, DeSantos money on this team. And if you don't give it to me, I'll just walk away and I'll go back and play for Malmo and we'll call it a career.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how that one plays out. Again, with the LA Galaxy just taking a look, like I'd said, that they have 3 teams below them that they have to face. The Vancouver Whitecaps are only 1 point back, so they're in that playoff hunt. Minnesota at 33 points. They are 8 points behind the Galaxy, probably out of it. And then the Houston Dynamo, 9 points behind them. So, they can get fat and healthy on a couple of bottom feeders there. But the Vancouver Whitecaps match is going to be very, very tough. That match, I'd have to see if it's. I'm going to have to take a quick peek where that particular matchup is. And then they also have Sporting KC, which is currently second. Sporting KC is going to be on the road, but the Whitecaps is actually this weekend at home for the LA Galaxy. So here's a chance for them to kind of eliminate the Whitecaps and really poise themselves to attack the Sounders. Now, if you look at the Sounders' schedule coming up, and I'm just trying to go ahead and punch that up here quickly, what they have left, because the schedule is unbalanced. And for some reason, my computer is just giving me a hard time here. The Sounders, moving forward, they actually have 5 games left where the LA Galaxy have 4. And the Sounders have Colorado Rapids at home, Houston Dynamo at home, so 2 bottom teams. Orlando City on the road, Houston on the road, again, 2 more bottom teams, and then the San Jose Earthquakes. So they also have what would appear to be a reasonably soft path to the MLS Cup playoffs. So we'll have to see how that works out. San Jose, bottom of the table. The Rapids, Houston Dynamo, all 3 of them are 10th, 11th, and 12th in the West. And the Orlando City team is 11th in the East. So all bottom teams and a much easier path for Seattle. We'll have to see if Zlatan gets them in. Let's move on. Let's talk about Sergio Aguero, Rob. Now, Sergio Aguero, like we had mentioned in our intro at the beginning of this the show, he breaks into the top 10 all-time EPL scorers with a goal on the weekend, putting him 10th, breaking a tie between him and Teddy Sheringham that puts him at 147 goals. Next up, Les Ferdinand from QPR, Newcastle, Spurs, West Ham, Leicester, Bolton Wanderers. He's at 149 goals. The magic here, or the big key, is he scored the 147 goals in 212 matches. It's 0.69 goals. This is the best of anybody in the top 10 in terms of goal scoring production in the Premier League, Rob. I poo-poo on Aguero a little bit, but for me, I poo-poo on him more because of his injury history, his ability to stay healthy for a full season. And I think that's where my disdain for him is really because of my regret that I don't get to see 38 games of Sergio Aguero, because he is magical. You know, but looking back on him, Rob, where does this stand for you, breaking into the top 10, especially so quickly, 212 matches, the fastest of anybody, and 0.69 goals per match, man. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hinted at it all. I mean, you know, it's unfortunate that we can't see the best of Sergio Aguero throughout his entire 38-game season. But, you know, you kind of see that with a lot of players nowadays. But, you know, for a player like him, you know, who would have thought, I mean, imagine him, you know, being that fit. You know, how many goals would he have scored? How many more goals would he have scored? That just shows how, you know, talented that he is and really a special player that he is. I mean, yeah, it's going to be tough for him to, you know, go down. You know, I mean, yeah, he will go down as one of the greatest Premier League players of all time. Maybe not the best, probably not the best foreign player, because I think there's still a bunch of different players out there, you know, that have, you know, indeed made that, got that title. But certainly, I mean, with the level that he's at right now, you know, he's only 32, if I'm not mistaken, or 30. No, he's 30. Never mind. So, yeah, I mean, you know, on form, I mean, I would not be surprised if he hits the 200 mark sooner or later. You know, the record is Thierry Henry for the most goals by a foreigner is 175. So he does only need 29 goals, and they could easily do that in probably a season or two. So I see that happening. And he's a special player. I mean, you know, that's all we can say. I mean, you know, unfortunately, you know, the injuries did get the worst out of him. But, you know, he's still one of the quality, one of the best strikers in the world, you know, the best at, one of the best in the Premier League. You know, he's clearly has that talent over there. But, you know, it's sad because we think that we would get much more of him. But that was the only problem that we have of him, is just because of his injury. You know, despite his ability, you know, that playing time has just been so, so limited because of the injuries of his career.
Right. Now, you know, looking at some of the other milestones in the EPL, Alan Shearer holds the record for the fastest to 100 goals in the league. Also had the between Shearer and Harry Kane, who was the second fastest to score 100 goals in the league as well. So some of the best ratios there. The top ratio, the second best ratio in the top 10 for goals is the aforementioned Thierry Henry, who scored it at 0.68 goals, which is slightly behind Sergio Aguero's 0.69. So that's you know, still amazing. Just looking up and down this list, Harry Kane is currently on pace. He's got 111 goals. He's 19th, and he's scoring them at 0.71 goals per match. Per game. So, you know, that's probably going to be the next biggest threat coming up this top 10 list. And it's going to be interesting to see where Aguero finishes on this list overall. I don't know that he'll get to 200 because I don't know that he can stay healthy long enough. But I think he's going to get within striking distance. And I think he could, you know, very well catch Thierry Henry. What is the math there? 31 goals behind Thierry Henry for the most by a foreigner.
No. 175 minus 147, that's 28.
Oh, 175. Sorry, I was looking at the 177. Okay. Yeah, so 28 goals. I mean, he could do that sometime next year, I would say, you know, given, you know, depending on if he stays healthy or not, you know, could even do it at the end of this year. So, but I think getting to, you know, getting to 200, getting to 260 where Alan Shearer is, I think those are going to be some pretty hefty milestones to reach, to say the least.
Definitely.
All right, so we've got one more topic we want to talk about tonight, and it's kind of a last-minute topic, a last-minute ad. FIFA had their best awards tonight, and the biggest thing catching the most headlines is who won the best player. I kind of alluded to it in the opening monologue. It was not Lionel Messi. Lionel Messi finished fifth in this voting. It was not Cristiano Ronaldo. He was, I believe, second, Rob. Correct me if I'm wrong. The number one player, the FIFA Player of the Year for 2018, Mr. Luka Modric. Kind of amazing, you know. I would have said to you, Rob, on January 1 of this year, even March 1st of this year, right? If I said to you, who is going to be the FIFA Player of the Year, you would have said...
probably Lionel Messi.
Fifth. You know, Mo Salah, third. I don't know where Kevin De Bruyne finished, but I don't think he wasn't in the top three. And he would have been another one that we would have pointed to and said, yeah, that's going to be a winner. So are the FIFA voters here really going heavily on his performance at the World Cup? Because I think even when you look back to the Real Madrid Champions League victory this year, I think many would point to Ronaldo first and foremost before you got to Luka Modric. Not saying that he didn't help and he wasn't an integral part, but I think if you based it on Real Madrid's performance in the Champions League, you would have voted Cristiano Ronaldo first and foremost, no?
Yeah. No, I agree. But certainly the World Cup has definitely helped him 100%.
I agree. And not that he doesn't deserve the award. For me, I'm kind of happy that if it was going to be somebody breaking this grouping of Ronaldo Messi awards, I'm kind of happy it's Luka Modric. To me, he's a class player. He's a great player that goes unnoticed. He is, for me, Rob, he's one of the closest things to Andrea Pirlo we're going to see right now. With just vision and with skill and with depth of touch, that's the kind of player that Luka Modric to me is. And I think a player of that quality doesn't go recognized often enough because he's not scoring the flashy goal, but he does so much to get that guy to get to that flashy goal that it goes unrecognized for me, Rob.
Yep, and I'm just going by the list real quick. I'm actually going to give you a small trivia question.
Okay.
How many Modric is obviously a new addition to the FIFA Best Player of the Year, World Player of the Year Ballon d'Or, mm-hmm. ever since it was implemented in 1991. Mm-hmm. Can you name how many different players have won that award? So going back to 1991, 27 years ago, okay. How many different players have won this award?
Okay, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I think he's won it. I'm going to say 10.
Nope.
Less or more?
More.
Okay, then I'm 12. 13?
More.
Really?
Wow. 27-year span.
Yeah, but you think that Ronaldo and Messi have got to have a lockdown on about 8 of those years, right? So 19 years.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, 8.
Okay.
But you have to look at the other 18 years.
19 years. And you've got, so how many would Ronaldo have won? You know, Fenomeno, how many would he have won?
All right, so I'll go in the order. Okay. It's 15 different winners. Modric is the 15th different winner since 1991. The list goes as follows. Lotta Matthäus.
Let me see if I can get a few of them. So we'll get Matthäus. I'll go with Ronaldo.
Yep, he's won it 3 times.
Not Cristiano, El Fenomeno.
El Fenomeno.
Ronaldinho.
Won it twice.
Zidane.
Won it 3 times.
Luis Figo.
Yes.
Fabio Cannavaro.
Yep.
Hold on. Thierry Henry.
Nope.
Really? Okay. He was one of the ones I was counting on in my head. All right, so go ahead from there. I mean, I've got a few, but there's 15 of them, so.
All right, so obviously Ronaldo and Messi have 5 apiece. Mm-hmm. You have Luka Modric, a new one. Zidane with 3, Ronaldo with 3, Ronaldinho with 2, Luis Figo with 1, Romario with 1, George Weah, Roberto Baggio, Rivaldo, Lautaro Martinez, Fabio Cannavaro, Marco van Basten, and the last player before the whole Messi-Ronaldo stronghold, mm-hmm. Kaká.
Ah, that's right, too, yeah. Wow, that's a great list of players, man. That's a good. We should have used that as a trivia question one night.
Oh, I have to tell you, Joe, imagine if these kind of award ceremonies happened on Twitter pre-2007.
Yeah, think back. Okay, so the Cannavaro one, I think people would have probably been up in arms with. But Italy wins the World Cup. I get it. And he was enormous. I mean, I don't know. Many will point to Pirlo as being the bigger part of that team, Del Piero too, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Buffon, but I think Cannavaro in the middle of that defense was tremendous. So I think that there might have been some scuttlebutt about that one, but no. God, I'm trying to think. What year did Figo win it?
2000.
I'm trying to think.
And this was the top 3. Mm-hmm. 2001. My fault. Okay. 2001. This was the top 3: David Beckham and Raul.
And Raul scored all those goals at Real Madrid, and actually Figo was at Real Madrid at that point, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, 2 Real Madrid players, did they win Champions League that year?
No, Bayern Munich won it.
Okay, so that's, I think there's probably, might have been some argument, especially, or there would have been some question about it because, Raul and Figo would have taken votes from each other, right?
Right, no, but just as one last thing, Joe, and this is a personal opinion, I just want you to give me a yes or no question.
Yeah.
Sorry, yes or no answer.
Yeah.
After this award ceremony, and of course the one that he won a couple of weeks ago, the UEFA Best Player, mm-hmm. is Luka Modric the best player in the world right now?
No.
Okay. No. I think so too.
Simple.
So, the rest of the world 11, by the way, David De Gea, Dani Alves, which is amazing. He is ageless. Rafa Varane, Sergio Ramos, Marcelo, very heavy. Yeah, there's one thing I noticed about this list, Rob, very heavy Real Madrid. Then you go to the midfield, which is Luka Modric, N'Golo Kante, Eden Hazard. Up top, Lionel Messi, Kylian Mbappe, and Cristiano Ronaldo. That's
I think I would agree with the midfields and the forwards. Defenders are a bit suspect. Yeah.
Who'd you like putting there?
Well, if we're going based on the World Cup, I mean, well, actually not even the World Cup. I even think overall, I think Courtois, you know, should have been the goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. You know, I think he would have been a great pick as the goalkeeper, had a great World Cup. Maybe even Jan Oblak. Yeah. I thought they go Madrid.
Well, Subasic also had a great Subasic. Croatia, you know.
Defender-wise, I would put, you know, obviously they play different positions, but I think this is based on position, but I would put a player like Diego Godin. Yeah. You know, he was sensational.
But who do you remove? Do you remove Varane or do you remove Sergio Ramos?
That's the thing. You can't, because I think Ramos is the best center back in the world. Yeah. I think that goes without saying. Varane won the World Cup, so, I mean, you know, play a three-line. Like, play three defenders, you know, add an extra midfielder or a 3-4. Yeah, like, do a 3-4-3. Yeah. I don't know. I would, if you're going to put a 3-4-3, you know, I'd put someone like, I don't know, De Bruyne or Rakitic.
Yeah, because Kevin De Bruyne's not on this team. I think Dani Alves, the Dani Alves selection is a little suspect.
Right.
You know, given, you know, what his season was cut short at PSG last year, so. And he didn't even get to the World Cup because of his injury. So I would say Dani Alves is probably the questionable one there. I also question not having Kevin De Bruyne on here. I probably remove Eden Hazard for Kevin De Bruyne on this list. I think N'Golo Kante needs to be on there, especially given with his performance in the World Cup. I think Hazard, if you're going to do that, I think you need to remove Hazard and put De Bruyne on there instead.
Right.
And I don't think I argue with the top three, Messi, Mbappe, and Ronaldo. I don't think I can argue with that, you know.
I think the debate could be Griezmann, maybe.
Griezmann, yep. Maybe Neymar, too. Maybe, but I'm not soured on the Kylian Mbappe choice, so.
Right.
But that's your World 11 that was voted earlier today. So, Rob, we're almost out of time here, so let's get back to the trivia question, and which was, again, Sergio Aguero. In his 300th match, breaks into the top 10 of all-time goal scorers in the Premier League. By league, can you give me the number of players who have scored all of their goals for one team?
So I can't really think of a number, but I can give you some players. Maybe that'd be much easier.
Okay, yeah. Let's. You want to start with the Premier League since we've got
Aguero
as well.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Right. So you got Sergio Aguero. Is Wayne Rooney on that list?
No, he's not, because he scored at Everton.
Ah, that's right. Oh, okay, that's right. Oof.
You actually mentioned his name earlier in the broadcast.
But he only played at one club.
He did only play. No.
He didn't play at one club.
Who's that?
I don't know. Oh, Harry Kane?
No, he's not. He's not in the top 10 for the EPL. Not yet, at least.
Not yet.
I'll give it to you.
I'm drawing a blank here. I'm sorry. Thierry Henry.
Scored all his goals with Arsenal. Also, the only other foreign player in the top 10 in the EPL.
Right.
And there's only two in the EPL, by the way. So I'm going to help you out there. Okay. So what other league do you want to go to?
Let's do Spain.
Okay, go for it.
All right, so the obvious one is Messi.
Yep, number one.
Ronaldo?
By the way, Henry, number five. Aguero was number 10. So okay. Messi, number one, scored all his goals with Barca.
Ronaldo.
Number two, scored all his goals with Real Madrid.
How many are there in Spain?
There are four.
Four.
Another name that we mentioned earlier tonight on the show.
Eto? Sanyo Eto?
No.
Who do we mention?
we mentioned him that he finished in the top three in the voting in 2001.
Raul.
Fifth in, scored all his goals for Real Madrid. Fifth on this list.
So and there's one more you said?
One other person, yep. He did not play for Real Madrid or Barcelona.
Where did he play?
Athletic Bilbao. He's actually third on this list.
I have no idea.
Tell Mozada.
Oh, yeah, of course.
All right. So we did the Premier League. We did Spain.
Let's do Italy.
Let's do Italy. How many players, first of all? Give me a guess as to how many players.
Three?
Two.
Two, okay. Mauro Icardi?
No, not on this list.
Gonzalo Higuain?
Not on this list.
Wow.
We have scored at more than one team. We have scored at Napoli and Juventus. And now Milan, so.
It can't be Zlatan, because he's done it.
No, he played for both Milan teams. And
Batistuta?
No.
Shevchenko?
No. In fact, they're both Italians.
They're both... Oh my God. Del Piero.
Del Piero's ninth on the all-time scoring list in Italy. Scored all his goals for Juventus. Now the big one, the captain.
Totti.
Francesco Totti, number two on this list. Scored all his goals with Roma. You got the Bundesliga and you've got Ligue 1. Which one do you want to do?
I'll do Ligue 1.
Ligue 1, there's three names.
Zlatan?
Zlatan is sixth on the list. That's one.
God. Oh, this one's a harder one.
You say that now, but when you get the answers, you're going to be like, oh my God, that should have been so easy.
Cavani?
Cavani's fifth on this list. All the goals for PSG for both of them.
There's one more, you said?
One more. Still active player, no longer plays in Ligue 1.
No longer plays in...
But he's on this list.
On this list, and he doesn't play. What league does he play?
He plays in England now.
He plays in England. Lacazette?
Alexander Lacazette is eighth on this list. Scored all his goals for Lyon.
Okay.
You got the Bundesliga. One obscure name, at least it was obscure to me.
Really?
Yeah, but one name you should know.
I was going to say Lewandowski for some reason.
Nope, he would have scored goals at Dortmund and Bayern.
Gerd Müller?
Gerd Müller's first on the list of all-time scorers in the Bundesliga. Scored all his goals at Bayern Munich. Oh. And the last one is sixth on the list. There's two. Sixth on the list, scored all his goals at Leverkusen. I don't think you'll get it.
No. So I'm going to give it sorry. To
you. Ulf Kristen.
Ulf Kristen, yeah. Leverkusen sorry.
Scored all his goals there. So, in the Premier League, you only have two players that scored all their goals in the top 10 for one club. Thierry Henry, fifth on the list. Sergio Aguero, now 10th on the list. In the Bundesliga, it's Gerd Müller, first overall in all scoring in Bundesliga. Ulf Christensen is sixth at Bayer Leverkusen. In Italy, Francesco Totti, second overall in Serie A, scored all his goals at Roma. Alessandro Del Piero is ninth, scored all his goals at Juventus. In Spain, we have four players. Raul in fifth place, scored them all at Real Madrid. Telmo Zada at Athletic Bilbao. Cristiano Ronaldo at Real Madrid. And Lionel Messi, number one overall in scoring in Spain, scored all his goals at Barcelona. And in France, we have Alexander Lacazette, eighth, scored all his goals at Lyon. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, sixth, scored all his goals at PSG. And France, currently fifth on the all-time goal-scoring list, scoring all his goals at PSG. Your trivia question for the night. Mr. Rojas, without any further ado, sir, want to hit the closing music?
Let's do it.
All right, let's go for it. Let me get this turned down here a little bit for our listeners so they can hear me. So, for episode 218 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Joanna Frondin for joining us tonight. Next week, we will return with league action, Champions League, and Europa League previews for Match Day 2, and more shenanigans. So, from the Beyond the Pitch Media Network for episode 218 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
I am Roberto Rojas.
Thank you for listening, everyone, and good night.